If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester with me, Clint Boone. Every week we'll be celebrating the spirit of Manchester by talking to somebody who's helped shape the city. This week I'm joined by Mancunian chef and restaurant owner, Mary Ellen McTague. Mary Ellen describes how dropping out of university to pursue a career in cooking led her to work for one of the most famous chefs in the country.
I went to Waterstones on Deansgate and I bought a copy of the Good Food Guide and read it cover to cover and then just wrote to 10 places and just said, I've got no experience, I really love cooking, I want to cook professionally, please take me on. And most of them wisely ignored me. A few of them replied, and Heston was one of the first to reply.
And she'll tell us about what she considers to be the similarities between chefs and musicians.
I think the adrenaline of doing a service must be similar to doing a show, because afterwards everyone needs to kind of taper off.
It's a great pleasure to welcome to the studio a Mancunian woman who's made quite a name for herself on the UK's culinary scene in recent years, and she's become something of a regular on our radio sets and television sets as well. Mary Ellen McTague, how are you?
Hiya, I'm good, thank you. Very
lovely
glad to be
you.
Here.
I was in your establishment recently, wasn't I? Yep. The Creameries, and having a nice, wonderful experience as always. We're going to talk about your current situation in a minute or two. We're going to talk about Manchester, that's the main thing that we do on these podcasts.
Yep.
But let's start. Where and when you were born, Mary Ellen, was it Bury?
It was, yeah. I was born in Bury, Fairfield Hospital, and grew up. I lived in Bury till I was, till I was 18, till I went to uni in Manchester.
Right. So you've never strayed too far from home then?
Well, I have, actually. I kind of, when I quit uni to start cooking, I went all over the place. My first job was up in the Lakes, and then I ended up in the States for a couple of years.
That's right, went to America.
And then, yeah, and then down in Bray, where I worked, when I worked at the Fat Duck, I was there for 4 years. So I spent about 10 years, actually, living away from Manchester, but was always just desperate to get back, really.
Yeah.
It was really good to come home.
I know that feeling. It's that kind of place, isn't it? Let's talk about your childhood then. What are your memories of growing up in Bury?
Well, we lived outside of Bury, so more on the sort of, it was Greenmount, so up towards, or Hawkshire rather, up towards Ramsbottom and Bolton that way. So it was a little bit countrified. So we weren't, it wasn't like... sort of the city really, or the town even, but I was one of six kids, I am one of six kids, and my parents each have they're each from a family of six, so we had this huge, huge Irish Catholic family. So I think my memories are mainly about just being surrounded by loads of people, loads of noise, loads of food.
Lots of food.
Yeah.
And did your interest in food start back then?
I think so. My mum's a really good cook, and my eldest sister, she helped out a bit, sort of making tea for us, and she became a really good cook. And then I think when I started home ec, when I was at high school, whenever it was, year two or three, I just really loved it. I loved the fact that I could make something and take it home and give it to people and they'd really enjoy it. It was a really nice feeling.
A nice first step into the wonderful world of chefing. Yeah. What about music? Did you get into music as a kid?
Yeah, massively. Music is and has always been a huge part of my life. And my world in Manchester, my social groups and networks are all based around music. There's a sort of friends who are in a band that is that them and their sort of connections through their practice studios and stuff is kind of the focal point for it all the people I know really that I know and love and hang around with. But growing up, my first purchase that I made for myself was Voice of the Beehive when I was probably about 8 or 9, I think. I mean, I liked and still do like a load of crap as well, obviously. My brother's a musician. He's just a little bit older than me, and he started playing guitar quite early on. So, in fact, my whole family's quite musical. I'm the only one that isn't actually. I don't actually play an instrument. I just really love to listen to music.
Can you sing?
I do sing a lot.
Give us a song.
I sing a lot really badly by myself. Right. I do a lot of car singing. So my children get the joy of hearing me wail along to quite a lot of things.
Yeah.
I love to sing, but I can't sing. I can't play any instruments, but music's always been huge for me.
What are the first gigs you remember seeing?
So I was a bit of an indie kid when I kind of first started buying Enemy and Melody Maker, and I kind of realised there was a uniform. So I got my DMs and my checked pants and a velvet jacket and used to go and hang out at Monty's in Bury on a Friday night for the indie night. Massively underage. they really didn't seem to care. Half my school was there. So first bands I went to see that I really loved, Tetsy Fly was a gig I went to see at the Boardwalk in the early 90s. Elastica as well. I loved Elastica.
Yeah.
And people used to say I looked a little bit like the bassist, Donna. Donna the bassist? Or she the guitarist? Anyway. So I remember going to see Elastica, all the indie bands whenever I could.
And you ended up working at one of the most iconic venues the city's ever known. You ended up at the Roadhouse, didn't you?
I did.
In the kitchen.
Yeah. I started off on the bar and it was through friends of mine. So Guy and Pete from Elbow, my brother grew up with them, so I became friends with my brother. And they worked there, so they got me a job behind the bar. But it was whilst I was working there that I kind of had my eureka moment, decided I needed to leave uni and go into cooking instead.
Right.
So it was because I overheard Kate Mountain, who was then the owner of my boss and later on became my business partner at Aubrey, but I overheard her chatting to someone saying that they needed someone to do the food in order to keep the late licence. And I knew I liked cooking, so I just offered my services and ended up doing the bar food and catering for touring bands, which I really loved because they'd have, some of the bands would have like really strange dietary requirements, like macrobiotic. And so I had to be quite creative and I really enjoyed that. But it was there that I realised I didn't want to carry on at uni and I wanted to cook professionally instead. So it's a massively pivotal part of my life working at the Roadhouse.
I'm guessing you must have cooked for some pretty famous people back then. They might not have been famous at the time, but...
Well, I remember Muse playing. And I mean, I cooked for most people that played there. We had 3 or 4 gigs a week on. I remember Muse...
Coldplay? Did you do Coldplay? They played there.
I don't think I worked that one. I missed the Coldplay.
I interviewed Chris Martin once for another radio station that I used to be involved with. He was saying about in the early days, he used to love going up and down the country in a transit van and stopping at the motorway services and getting ginsters, pies.
Yes.
It's a great advertisement for ginsters. I never did do anything with it. I should have sent it to him.
Well, should have sent you some pasties.
That would have been great, wouldn't it? I've still got the audio. I could probably use that, actually. I should contact Chris and say, let's sell this idea to ginsters and we'll go halves on it. You left the Roadhouse. Did you leave before it closed or were you still there when it closed?
Yeah, I left. Kate and I had Aubrey together in Prestwich for 5 years. And it was the Roadhouse closed after Aubrey did, actually. That must have been 2015 that it closed.
Right.
and Unruh closed in 2014. So she still had both places when we were in business together. So yeah, it was still a hugely influential venue. At the time I kind of left to go off and cook.
What's happening now? Is it still empty, do you know?
It's still empty, yeah. I don't know what's happening with that building. Right.
Somebody asked me yesterday, I just randomly got a text last night from a friend of mine saying, what's happening with the roadhouse? I don't know. You wrote to Eston Blumenthal, didn't you?
I did. Well,
more than once.
Yeah. I only wrote to him once, but when I decided that I wanted to stop doing studies and start cooking, I didn't really know how to go about it. So I went to Waterstones on Deansgate and I bought a copy of the Good Food Guide and read it cover to cover. And then just wrote to 10 places and just said, I've got no experience. I really love cooking. I want to cook professionally. Please take me on. And most of them wisely ignored me. And a few of them replied. And Heston was one of the first to reply. He rang me, actually, a few days after I sent the letter. And he said, come in for a chat. So I went down to Bray a few days later and had lunch and then met him. And he was really lovely. And But he said, we don't take on complete novices. You need to go away and get some experience and then come back once you've had a few years cooking. The other positive response was from Sharrow Bay Hotel up in the Lake District, which at the time was really highly regarded, had a Michelin star. It was and just a really, really beautiful place and still is a really stunning part of the world. So I went up there and I joined the housekeeping team. And then I didn't let them forget that I was supposed to be going into the kitchen. So I'd ask probably several times a week if it was definitely still happening.
Right, so you were cleaning, doing...
I was doing housekeeping, right. Which was really hard work. I mean, it's the hardest work I'd ever done.
Right.
Up until I started working in the kitchen and then I realised that was really hard work. but it was good, it was fun. It was just something I was kind of doing whilst I waited for this position to become available in the kitchen. So I did a few months in housekeeping and then went into the kitchen and I was the first woman they'd ever had in the kitchen. They had a woman who came once a year to make marmalade for the season. Mm. And they had women working in what they called the bakehouse, which was like the desserts kitchen. But in the main kitchen, there'd just never, ever been a woman in there.
Right. Was it an unusual experience? Did you just crack on with it?
Yeah, it was pretty unusual. They were really confused, I think. Certainly the head chefs. There were three head chefs. They'd been there sort of 20, 30 years at that point. So they just did not know what to do with me. So I think for about a year, they wouldn't speak to me directly. They'd only speak to me through the medium of one of the younger chefs.
Really?
Who was less scared of speaking to a woman.
Did you end up marrying one of them?
I did end up marrying one of them. Lawrence, my ex-husband. We met at Sharrow Bay. We have two children. Yeah, we met at Sharrow Bay and then we had Aubrey together. So yeah, we cooked together a lot.
Right. And you went off to the States, didn't you, soon after Sharrow Bay?
Yeah, well, Lawrence had gone there first. So he had a scholarship through his catering college and went out to the States. So I just kind of went out and joined, sort of followed my boyfriend out to America. And we went to somewhere quite strange. I mean, it's not somewhere you would pick as a holiday destination, although it's in the top 10 holiday destinations for Americans, apparently. So this is Branson, Missouri, which is a bit like a redneck Blackpool, I suppose. It was Yakov's Magic Pet Show.
So it's like Blackpool.
Blackpool's great. And there was Dolly Parton's Dixie Stampede was another of the theatres. So it was the town was just, it was, there was a strip, what they called the strip, so the main road through town, and there was just theatres and shows and malls either side of it. There was no like cafes or museums or libraries or anything.
Right.
It was quite weird. And it was also the home of the KKK.
Really?
Yeah, so it was a pretty sort of politically and socially very divided kind of place. It was also like learnt a lot on the cooking side and met some really wonderful people as well, some lifelong friends.
And when you came back to the UK, you got in touch with Heston again and he sorted your gig out, didn't he?
He did, yeah, he gave me a job.
Proper job. This is when he was an household name then, wasn't he, still at this time?
He was. So when I started there, he had two Michelin stars, he'd done some telly, he'd written a couple of cookbooks, but he wasn't as sort of well-known as he is now. During my first year working there, he just went stratospheric. I mean, he got his third star, which was despite me, not because of me. And voted best restaurant in the world at the World's 50 Best Restaurant Awards.
Is this the Heinz Head we're talking about?
No, this is the Fat Duck.
Right, Fat Duck.
So the Heinz Head he bought a few years after I started working there. And then my last year working for Heston, I was doing historical research and development at the Hinds Head, which was absolutely amazing. I mean, I got to work with and meet some really amazing food historians, and I got access to all these really ancient cookbooks. And it really, that's a huge area of interest for me now, is historical food and sort of food culture and food history in this country, because I think we've had a bit of a bad rep in, you know, in the last couple of centuries, really, is somewhere where you don't get great food. But learning sort of all about what happened with our food culture and why in France and Italy and Spain you still get these amazing hams and cheeses and these traditions that have been handed down, and why that kind of died out here and stuff. It's and there's been a huge revival in that as well.
Is that going to be a TV series by any chance? It sounds like one, doesn't it?
It does sound like one. I would really like it to be. Yeah. I mean, it's dead interesting, and there's a lot to talk about there. So yeah. Telly.
What was that really cool thing that you did at Manchester Museum not long ago? What was that all about?
I did my first event for Manchester International Festival was at Manchester Museum.
Yeah.
So it was called High Tea in Wonderland. It was sort of in tandem with the Wonder.Land musical that Damon Albarn had done for the festival that year. And it was kind of, we got the herbarium department of the museum allowed us access to the top floor where they've got all the specimens, and it was an absolutely amazing space to work in. And so we created a kind of, it's like an Alice in Wonderland through the rabbit hole kind of journey involving food and set dressing and music and lighting and costume. And I just absolutely loved it. So then when they invited me back to do one in 2017, I was thrilled. Yeah,
it's a great thing, the Manchester International Festival. It's a brilliant, brilliant time to be around the city centre. Let's talk about some of these awards that you've won over the years. Restaurant of the Year 2012, Manchester Food and Drink Awards. Chef of the Year 2013, same company, Manchester Food and Drink. Chef of the Year 2014, Cheshire Life. Chef of the Year 2014, Lancashire Life. The list is endless. You must have a big mantelpiece for all these, Mary Ellen, is that right?
They are... They're not on the mantelpiece, but they're on the sideboard, just to remind the kids what it is I do, why I'm never home.
Let's talk about your kids. Paddy and Joe, how old are they now?
So they are 8 and 10.
Yeah.
Joe's going to be 11 soon, and he's going to high school in September.
Mad, isn't it, how time flies.
God,
like that.
It's crazy.
And how are they with food? Do they appreciate good food?
They do. They are, I mean, they've obviously been massively fussy. They're not like, you know, they were toddlers and there was a time when they would, I think just to be contrary, they would only eat what the other one wouldn't eat. So there was a time, there's a period when Joe would only eat plain pasta and Paddy would only eat pasta sauce. He'd make a meal and be able to divide it exactly in half.
That's psychological warfare with the mum, that, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Well, I think it's the one area of their life they have some control over. They can actually refuse to put food in their mouth. So they do. But nowadays, they're both quite adventurous. Again, they still eat completely different things, but they're quite adventurous with it. Paddy he's a flavour guy, definitely.
Really?
He likes to have a fried egg in the morning with balsamic vinegar, soy sauce, mustard and ketchup on.
Oh, brilliant.
Just all the flavours on one plate.
And it's good to be aware of that stuff at that age as well. Some kids are just all about the chicken nuggets, aren't they?
They are. I mean, they love it. They don't, they're no help. Like, they won't, like, you know, help out, but they...
Do you do a lot of cooking at home then?
I just do normal family food at home, just what is quick and easy and reasonably nutritious and sort of everyone's kind of going to like, a lot of kind of pasta dishes and stuff. I try and do, when I've got a day off, I try and do sort of more adventurous stuff. The one thing that really got them trying different stuff was I used to do tacos every Tuesday, and there'd be some chicken and then some salad and some different sort of vegetable bits and the tacos. Mm. And the first taco I made, and they had to have one with everything on. And then after that, they could have whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
So Joe would just have the crisps, just the tacos, and I would just have the chicken. But it kind of opened them up to trying stuff, for sure. And their dad's quite strict about that. Then they've developed this thing where, well, he's got a rule where they're not allowed to say they don't like something. They have to say it's not to their taste,
right,
which is a good approach, I think.
I think it's important that you present these, not just a chef like yourself, but parents in general should be presenting kids with all these different alternatives from an early age, I think.
Yeah.
We do a lot of it. We have a Chinese hot pot that we use once every couple of weeks. We're considering giving them tripe. I don't think they've had tripe yet, but we're thinking of trying tripe on them.
Yeah.
Did you have tripe yet? Have you ever had
We didn't have that growing up. Our local butcher always had tripe in the, like, on the display. Yeah. I was always curious about it, but it just wasn't one of our family foods, so I never
tried it. It doesn't actually taste of anything. It's a texture thing,
yeah,
but you put pepper and vinegar and salt on it to give it a taste. But very Oldham thing. When I was a kid, it was everywhere. Brought up on tripe.
I might have to give that a go, actually. Yeah. In fact, I definitely should.
Now is a good time to do tripe because I don't think anybody's doing anything cool with it. And that's usually where the great little ideas come in.
It is.
You can have that one.
Thank you very much. I'll give you a percentage.
Yeah. Tag on tripe. And you set up your second restaurant recently, Creameries, which is still involved with you. You're not doing the cooking there now, you moved out of the kitchen.
So I spent a year there kind of setting up and training up a kitchen team. And really the demands of running a business and being a head chef are just, they're crazy. You know, it's like it's a good 80-hour week physically working. Mm. And then when you're not there, you still need to be catching up on admin and HR and stuff. So it's just a very, very, very demanding job, which is fine short term. But with my kids getting a bit older and the older one going to high school, I've decided that the day-to-day is best kind of left to someone younger and a bit more energetic.
So you're still a partner in that.
Still a partner.
What are you going to be doing with your time then in the immediate future?
So quite a bit of stuff out the Creameries. I've got a food and drink quiz with Elliot Eastwick coming up next month. I've got a still life supper club, which I'm really excited about. So I've got an artist friend, Margit van der Zwan, and she and I are teaming up and I'm going to create a still life centrepiece and she's going to do a guided drawing teaching class and then we eat the still life.
That's brilliant. Fun. That's really class,
yeah.
That, isn't it?
Like that'll be really good fun. Yeah. And then there's other dinners, pop-up dinners. I'm doing one at the Courtyard Dairy this week. And then
Can I just say, you should use the strapline, eat your heart out.
That is really good. Yeah. So we've been struggling with that. Just absolutely, yeah.
You can have that.
Coming up trumps today, thanks.
Yeah. Tripe
and eat your heart out. That's really good. So pop-up dinners, and then I'm also trying to just carve out the time to write. I've got a book that I've been working on for a little while, but I've not had any time to properly kind of sit down and do it. So I want to get that finished this year.
Yeah. Who are the, like, we've got a lot of cooking books at home, all the big chefs and that. Who are your favourite TV chefs or celebrity chefs, big chefs? Who are the ones that most inspired you?
Well, probably my favourite cookery author is Jane Grigson. So she passed away probably a good 30 years ago now. She was an absolutely incredible food writer, dead knowledgeable, knew all about the food history. And she was dead interested as well in kind of local traditions and seeking out dishes that have been forgotten. Like her books, you can just read as a book. It doesn't, like the recipes are kind of almost incidental. They're just really lovely to read. Elizabeth David, similar. She transformed kind of food in this country. So those two are really important for me. Heston, obviously. The 4 years I spent working there were just absolutely incredible and have really kind of, you know, transformed my life, I would say. Other than that, Angela Hartner, she's awesome. She's also a massive laugh. I've had the joy of going out for dinner with her a couple of times and she's ace.
Is really she a party girl?
Well, I mean, I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions, but she's fun.
It's funny because I've met a few of these chef types like yourself and there's a similarity with the rock and roll people we're talking about, you know, the musicians. It's very similar sort of spirit, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, totally. I think there are so many parallels. I think I've managed to have a career in music without actually being able to play any instruments or sing or anything. Because, you know, you start off, you learn a craft and you have to get good at the basics. You have to know your instrument and so you sort of learn the basics of cooking. And then at a certain point, you get competent enough to go off and create your own thing.
Yeah.
And you have all your influences that inspire you, but effectively you end up doing your own thing. The lifestyle can be quite rock and roll for sure. There's a lot of late nights and partying involved in cooking. I think the adrenaline of doing a service must be similar to doing a show because afterwards everyone needs to kind of, you know, taper off and stuff. So it's kind of there are so many parallels. Apart from the money, I would say that's the one thing that the musicians win on. Well, not
yeah, the successful ones. But yeah, I think, again, you've got that similarity of having an erratic income or, you know, consistent income stream.
Yeah,
you can be wedged up 1 minute and then have nothing for a few months after. Yeah. So we all know that feeling.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this city that we live in here. Yeah. You said before you love the place. What do you love about it?
I think it's got to be partly my sort of my physical roots. I mean, my entire family has moved away apart from, there's only my brother now out of all my siblings and my parents moved to France. And so out of my family, there's really only a couple of people left living in Manchester. But my you know, my adopted family, my friends who are like family, and a lot of whom I've been friends with since I was 14, 15, some younger than that, they're here. So my network is here. But there's something about, I don't know, there's something about the city itself, not just my kind of emotional connections to people, that I absolutely love. And I think it's partly, there's a sense of industry here. I think you get it in some big cities, well, a lot of big cities, but there's, you know, it's kind of the cradle of the Industrial Revolution. And obviously there is good and ill there, but it's always felt very alive and very kind of forward thinking and very creative, like musically and in terms of music and all sorts of art forms. I think that the one area, strangely, that we've kind of struggled with in Manchester, and I think is really starting to change now, is food and drink. That's always, I've always felt we've not quite kind of, there are other much smaller cities who seem to have much more diverse food scene, but it's definitely, that's absolutely transformed.
Maybe
over
that's
the last
because
20,
our,
20 years.
It might be because of our working class past, where
maybe
a priority has never been a big fancy dish.
No, and I think there's a bit of this. It's very true that in Manchester, restaurants that are too fancy and where there's a barrier, any kind of barrier, don't do particularly well. And I think there's an idea that that's not for us. Sort of thing, you know. That's
Simon Wood said exactly that when he was in. He said exactly the same thing.
But I was just going to say that the time I decided that I was going to move back to Manchester, I was living in Bray and I'd been there for 4 years, and I came back to visit some friends for the weekend. And I was driving up Oxford Road past the uni buildings and up towards where it turns into kind of the red brick buildings. And I was just like, and the sun was shining on the buildings. I was just like, I've just got to come back.
Yeah.
I can't stay away any longer.
It's addictive, isn't it?
It is.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
What are your favourite places to eat, apart from your establishments in the city? What are your favourite restaurants, Mary Ellen?
In Manchester, there's quite a few. So Umazushi, I absolutely adore. Have always loved Umazushi very much. And it's very small, and they just really care about what they do. They buy lovely ingredients and make the most incredible sushi.
Is that near the arena?
Yeah, it's Mirabelle Street, just under the arch. So that's fantastic. And Siam Smiles, I've always been a huge fan of. The head chef there, May, is so talented. Just makes the most beautiful noodle dishes and all sorts of Thai food. Then Hawksmoor, I absolutely love. I love it for a big dinner, but I also like the bar for meeting people. It's so consistently good. I love El Gato Negro. I've not been to Canto yet, the new one, but El Gato's amazing. I love cocktail beer, ramen and bun. I can't eat there because I'm celiac and they don't do anything gluten-free.
Oh, really?
Which is really annoying, and they should sort that out. But
but
they do the most incredible cocktails as well. Really beautiful. So, I mean, I could probably go on for hours. I'll stop there. But there's, we've got a really wonderful, thriving food and drink scene nowadays, and it's really lovely to see.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It is great.
If I was to ask you, Mary Ellen, who are your favourite humans of Manchester ever, who would they be?
Elizabeth Raffold. She was an 18th century cookbook writer. She had quite a lot of children, as people did in those days. Quite a lot of them didn't survive into adulthood. She had a husband who was, I think, drank away all the money that she ever made. But she was just really, really hardworking and really inspirational. She set up a domestic service agency. She worked away from being someone who worked in service herself to writing cookbooks, to running an agency for domestic staff, to, you know, she just kept going and going. So she's a huge inspiration, and I'd really love to do some kind of dinner or event to celebrate her life at some point.
And she was Mancunian?
Yes. Well, she was, I think she ended up passing away in Stockport, but her work was very much in Manchester city centre.
Brilliant.
So there's her. You're probably not allowed, like, all of your friends, are you?
You can have anybody you want.
But I want all of my friends.
All your friends. Oh, it's one thing. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. So they are just, they're definitely my adopted family. Through, you know, life has its ups and downs, and they have all just been the most incredible constant support. But they're also loads and loads of fun, you know. Yeah. Like, life is definitely much better with them around. So yeah, they're really important to me. And then I would say Katie Mountain.
Legend.
She, apart from being a really close friend, so she's kind of in the other group, you know, she's been my business partner. She's been really important for the city and for music in the city, and for actually music countrywide, worldwide. You know, she's kind of the place that she ran has been the starting point for so many careers, you know, and she's just been so generous with her time and her affection and her attention, and really you know, she's someone who likes to kind of see people go off and succeed, and she's made it a mission that she helps with that. So yeah, her. Yeah. There should be a plaque.
Were you a friend of John McBeath?
He was my boss when I first started at the Roadhouse. Mm. So I knew him a little bit as my boss, and then I moved away. I think Kate and Steve Lloyd, you know, who passed away sadly, I think it was 5 years ago now, they bought it from John.
Right.
Just as I was leaving to go off and cook. Yeah. So I met him a few times, but I didn't know him well.
Yeah, he's another legendary figure that's no longer with us, sadly. Yeah, yeah. Still here in spirit, though. Before you go, Mary Ellen, describe Manchester in three words.
Industrious, creative, and I'm trying to think of one word that encapsulates about 50 other things. alive.
Beautiful. That'll do. Mary Ellen McTague, thank you for being a human of Excess Manchester.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
That was Mary Ellen McTague. Make sure you join us next week, where I'll be speaking to former professional footballer and the first signing by Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United, Alan Tong. Don't forget to follow us on social media and subscribe to Humans of Excess Manchester. Rate us. Feel free to leave us a review. We love getting your feedback. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.